Today is Wednesday, May 27th, 2026, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. Mine disaster in China. Another Tragedy in the Global Industrial Slaughterhouse, by Peter Simmons. In the worst mining disaster in China since 2009, 82 workers were killed in a catastrophic gas explosion in a coal mine in Shanxi Province last Friday. Over 120 workers were hospitalized, several in critical condition, and two are still missing. The tragedy is a graphic example of the dangerous and noxious conditions facing miners and other workers around the world, as their lives and health are subordinated to the rapacious corporate drive for profit. The explosion occurred in the Liuzhenju coal mine, which is one of four mines operated by the privately owned Shanxi Tongzhou Coal Group, which had previously been fined for safety breaches last year. China's National Mine Safety Administration listed the mine in 2024 among 1,128 mines cited for severe safety hazards, in this case, cited for high gas levels, making it prone to explosions. Hundreds of rescue workers who were rapidly sent to the disaster site were hampered by inaccurate blueprints of the mine layout and an understated figure of the number of workers on shift underground. Many of the workers were not equipped with mandatory location trackers. While official investigations are just underway, state media has reported that only 124 of the 247 people underground at the time of the explosion were officially logged as entering the mine. A carbon monoxide sensor reportedly triggered an automated alarm indicating unsafe gas levels but was ignored. These discrepancies point to what is reportedly a not uncommon practice in coal mines in the surrounding Qinyuan County, the operation of unauthorized hidden tunnels worked by uncontracted laborers without trackers to boost production and minimize taxes. Extra shafts also impair effectiveness of ventilation systems designed to remove toxic gases and prevent the buildup of an explosive gas mixture. The death of 82 workers will impact heavily on families in the adjacent villages of Shangjuan, while miners are paid above the rural wage rate for their dangerous work. They often are the only support for an extended family. Miners internationally will recognize the dilemmas facing those in the Liuzhenju mine, living in a company town with few options for work, and facing dismissal if they speak up about unsafe conditions. Like their counterparts around the world, the state-run trade unions in China function to suppress worker opposition on behalf of corporations and government. Over the past 15 years, the death toll in coal mines has been dramatically reduced in China, as the government has shut down illegal coal mines and tighten safety regulations. Megamines, many of which are state-owned, have introduced sophisticated 5G monitoring systems, robotic sharers, and autonomous haulage that are more advanced than coal mines elsewhere, including in the United States, and minimize the dangers confronting miners at the coalface. The number of fatalities in China's coal mines has fallen from thousands a year to several hundred, even as production has increased. According to official figures, the death toll has dropped from 5,703 in 2000 to 228 in 2020, which is also reflected in the marked decline in fatalities per million tons from 4.12 to 0.058 over the same period. The implementation of advanced technology and tougher regulations was not only driven by the demands of industry, but also by widespread outrage over the atrocious conditions facing coal miners and the thousands of deaths. despite the turn to renewable energy sources, China is still heavily dependent on coal not only for energy, but also for the steel and chemical industries, and accounts for more than half of annual global coal production. Shanxi Province holds roughly a quarter of the country's coal reserves and is a key producer of coking coal necessary for steelmaking. While the province has some 370 intelligent mines using the latest technological advances, many more, including the Liushenyu coal mine, remain heavily reliant on manual labor. The response of the Chinese government to last Friday's explosion only highlights its fears that the high death toll will provoke anger, not only among mine workers, but more broadly in the working class. President Xi Jinping immediately urged no effort be spared to save lives and dispatched Vice Premier Jiang Guangqing to Shanxi to oversee rescue operations. Both Xi and Premier Li Qiang directed authorities to investigate the explosion and prosecute those responsible. However, the state media has focused its attention on the culpability of mine management rather than examine the role of the regulatory authorities at the local and provincial levels. However, many of the hundreds of thousands of posts that have burgeoned on Chinese social media are asking the obvious question: why was the mine permitted to continue operation, given its inherent dangers and previous safety breaches? Underlying this tragedy is the relentless drive under capitalism for production and profits above all else, including the lives of workers. What has been unleashed on the Chinese working class with the systematic restoration of capitalism by the Chinese Communist Party over the past 40 years is what faces the working class internationally. Around the world, mine workers are especially vulnerable due to the inherent dangers of the industry. Despite employing only about 1% of the global workforce, it accounts for more than 8% of all workplace fatalities worldwide. The deadliest disaster this year occurred at the Robaya mines in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. More than 600 workers were killed in two mine collapses, the first on January 28th and a second on March 4th. The mines account for over 15% of the world's tantalum supply. However, mine deaths regularly take place not just in more technologically backward regions, but also in major capitalist countries. Two miners died last week in the United States in separate incidents. A 25-year-old mechanic, Preston Pollard, was crushed to death in an open-cut Kentucky coal mine when heavy equipment fell on him. And 34-year-old Zachary Wolf was killed in a fall in an underground coal mine in Pennsylvania. In one of the worst coal mining disasters in decades, 29 coal miners were killed in a massive explosion in the Upper Big Branch mine in West Virginia on April 5, 2010, while four separate investigations found that the tragedy should have been prevented. No one has been held accountable at the Massey Energy-owned mine. 15 years ago, an explosion ripped through the underground Pike River coal mine on the remote west coast of New Zealand's South Island, trapping 29 workers. Rescue operations were called off after a second explosion. A Royal Commission of Inquiry found that Pike River Coal, which was deep in debt, had flouted basic health and safety regulations, but again, no one was held accountable. Whether in China, the United States, Africa, New Zealand, or any other place in the world, miners face similar dangers and political issues. Without taking matters into their own hands, workers cannot wage a fight for their lives and health against the combined forces of management, government, and the unions. This poses the necessity of forming independent workers' rank-and-file committees in every mine and workplace in every country, as part of workers' control over production and also of safety. The International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWARFC, has been formed on the initiative of the ICFI to enable workers to share information and coordinate their struggles across different industries and internationally, overcoming the national barriers enforced by the unions. Above all, what is required is a unified struggle by workers in China, the US, and globally to abolish the root cause of such disasters, the profit system itself, and the rational reorganization of production on a socialist basis. We urge workers in China and every country to take up this fight and to contact the World Socialist website. Israel Escalates Rampage in Lebanon by Andre Damon. Israeli forces struck Lebanon with more than 120 air raids on Tuesday, the sharpest single-day escalation since Israel resumed its bombings of the country in early March. The Lebanese Health Ministry said at least 31 people were killed and 40 wounded in attacks across the south and the Bekaa Valley. The ongoing destruction of Lebanon takes place within the framework of the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran, launched February 28th. While the U.S. media is focused on the terms of negotiations with Iran, Israel is expanding its campaign of mass murder and annexation in Lebanon. The bombing extends the U.S.-Israeli onslaught across the region that began in October 2023 with the genocide in Gaza. Israeli forces killed 14 people in the overnight bombing of Burj al Shamali, including 2 children and 3 women, at Masgara in the Bekaa Valley. Israeli strikes killed 11, including a woman and 2 children. They killed 5 at Kathariat al-Ruz and 4 at Habush, with 2 children among the dead at each. The Lebanese Health Ministry put the cumulative toll since Israel resumed its bombardment of the country on March 2nd at 3,213 dead and 9,737 wounded. The World Health Organization has recorded 608 killed in Lebanon since the ceasefire that took effect April 16th. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told his security cabinet Tuesday that, quote, "The IDF is operating with large forces on the ground and seizing dominant terrain. We are fortifying the security strip to protect the northern communities." On Monday, Netanyahu posted a video declaring, "We are at war with Hezbollah. We are not taking our foot off the gas. On the contrary, I have instructed them to press the pedal even harder." End quote. Israeli ground forces on Tuesday pushed beyond the so-called yellow line, the buffer zone Israel had declared inside southern Lebanese territory. An Israeli military official quoted by Reuters said the army was, quote, "operating in a targeted manner beyond the forward defense line in Lebanon, in accordance with the directives of the political echelon," end quote. Hezbollah claimed 32 separate operations Tuesday, targeting Israeli troops at Zaatar al-Sharqiyah with rockets, artillery, and explosive drones. The Israeli army ordered the entire city of Nabatiya, the second largest in southern Lebanon, to evacuate in the early hours of Tuesday. Orders for at least 21 additional towns and villages followed through the day, including Masgara and Sakhmar in Bika, and Kirbit Selm, Bir al-Sanasil, Kabrika, Majdal Salem, Kalawiya, Kfar Dunin, Tulin, and Asawana in the south. At the village of Karaun, near Lebanon's largest dam, an Israeli drone struck a man on a motorcycle. A civil defense rescuer, Kamel Yusif Zain, drove past, left his family in the car, and ran to administer first aid. A second Israeli strike hit the same spot and killed him. The Lebanese Civil Defense Directorate released video of the double tap, identifying Zain as the victim. In the southern town of Kirbet Selm, the National News Agency reported an Israeli strike targeted an ambulance bound for the village of Bir al-Salasil, forcing it to withdraw. Three further strikes hit the immediate vicinity of the Kwarun Dam itself, raising fears about the safety of the reservoir. Other strikes hit near the Beaufort Castle, a 12th century Crusader fortress UNESCO has called one of the best preserved of its kind. Israeli far-right finance minister Bezalel Smotrich wrote on X, quote, "We must put an end to the Hezbollah explosive drone threat. For every explosive drone, 10 buildings in Beirut must fall." End quote. The Lebanese bombardment runs in parallel with the continuing U.S. attacks on Iran. The U.S. military struck Iranian missile sites near Bandar Abbas on Monday and sank two Iranian Revolutionary Guard speedboats, with U.S. Central Command calling the action self-defense strikes. Iran's foreign ministry denounced what it called a flagrant violation of the ceasefire and pledged retaliation. Iran's Supreme Leader Mojtaba Khamenei said Tuesday, "The nations and lands of the region will no longer serve as shields for U.S. bases." End quote. U.S. President Donald Trump is moving, meanwhile, to make normalization with Israel a central war aim. In a Truth Social post over the weekend, he wrote that he was mandatorily requesting that all countries immediately sign the Abraham Accords, naming Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Pakistan, Turkey, Egypt, and Jordan. The escalation in Lebanon coincides with a deepening crisis within the U.S. political establishment over the Trump administration's negotiations with Iran. Democrats joined Republicans across the Sunday morning talk shows in attacking Trump from the right, denouncing his prospective Iran deal as insufficiently advantageous to U.S. imperialism. Senator Cory Booker told CNN Sunday that Trump was being played as a fool. He's got us in a situation that's worse than it was before. The United States, Booker told CNN, had let go of billions of dollars in negotiations to dismantle Iran's nuclear programs, giving Iran more money he warned would enable Tehran to fuel their terrorist proxies. End quote. The commentary being published in the U.S. media reflects the air of desperate crisis facing U.S. imperialism. Thomas Friedman, in the New York Times, asked on Tuesday, "How much crow will Trump have to eat on Iran?" "Only two questions remain regarding the U.S. war with Iran," Friedman wrote. "One, how big a plate of crow will President Trump have to eat to end this conflict with at least some achievements? And two, will he tell us the crow he's eating is lobster or filet mignon?" Brett Stevens, in a Times column Tuesday, made the case for escalating the war regardless of cost. "Heed the words of Robert Frost," he wrote, "the best way out is always through." Stevens called for the U.S. to, quote, "destroy a facility of military significance to the regime pending a material Iranian concession, and make good on the threat. The next day, two targets," and so on. The Wall Street Journal published an editorial Tuesday titled, "Iran's Skirmish Strategy in the Strait," charging that Hezbollah had fired, quote, "more than 900 rockets and 1,300 drones since the April 17th Lebanese ceasefire began," and demanding decisive U.S. or Israeli action to reverse the dynamic. End quote. American imperialism, confronted with crisis it has no answer to, can only escalate its efforts to secure global hegemony through military means. Whatever agreement is made with Iran, if any, will follow the pattern of the 2025 Gaza ceasefire and the Lebanon ceasefires of November 2024 and April 2026, each of which opened the way for a deeper offensive. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.